Welcome all sports fans. On this podcast,
no sport is left behind.
I'm Justin Williams.
I'm Cabrera Duran, and this is our brother from Down Under.
Me, Wallace Bruce.
We are the Pro Sports Podcasters.
Filling you in on the latest news from the world of sports.
Okay, so let's talk about the shortest league in existence, the 48 hours of the Super League, which involves some of the most powerful sports organizations on the planet. Why it was conceived, what happened to it, why was it killed so quickly, and was it a good idea? Would it have made money? Would it have made soccer better, or would it have made soccer worse? Let's begin with what was Super League. I'm talking to my buddy Bonnet here, who's got a lot of interest in the European leagues. He himself is a huge fan of
Red Star Belgrade.
Red Star Belgrade, which has on occasion made its way to Champions League. So let's hear what he has to say a little bit about Super League.
Well, good evening, everybody. Super League, people were talking about this project like in the last, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years, maybe even longer than that. I guess COVID situation made those big soccer clubs in Europe finally try to start the Super League, which was supposed to be a closed league where you would have, I think, 12, the richest, not necessarily the best, but the richest teams in Europe.
And 4 qualifying teams.
Right. But, I mean, because it's only about actually the money, and it's only about those richest clubs in soccer clubs in Europe, that's why I think it's very wrong, because it eliminates everybody else. Personally, I'm pretty happy that it didn't happen. If you ask me, I'm really happy that UEFA put a stop on it and they conditioned those clubs. They can't play their national championships. Their players, they can't play for the national teams. So imagine if they still managed to start the league. That means that, let's say, a 100-year-old derby in England or, I don't know, maybe, let's say, Spain will never happen again because of that. So that's why I strongly think that it wasn't a great idea at all.
Now, hold on. So you're talking about how the exclusion of players from national events would have been a major factor. But when it comes right down to it, let's be honest, a lot of these players don't want to play for their national clubs anyways. There's no money in it. All they're really getting is the pride of playing for their country.
That's why you're playing for your country, not for the money.
But a lot of these guys could care less about the pride of playing for their country. There are a lot of top players in the world that would rather not play for their country.
I doubt.
I'm telling you, and if it's that important to them, they could just sign with one of the clubs that isn't involved, right? If playing for your national country is your motivation for playing soccer or playing football, whatever you want to call it, then, you know, turn down the lucrative offer from Real Madrid and play somewhere else and then still play for your country. To me, that isn't a big enough deterrent, really. I think it's more about what it does to UEFA and FIFA's own championships. How excited would people be for Champions League if all the top teams aren't involved?
Of course not. I mean, it changed the Champions League completely. You would lose the meaning, you know. It's not only that, it's also from the point of view of the money-wise, it would probably, UEFA and FIFA would lose all those major sponsors, like Heineken or whatever.
That's right. They would lose huge amounts of money.
For sure.
Huge amounts of money.
For sure.
And then even the individual clubs that are left behind, they're not going to attract the kind of crowds they would have got when they're playing against those marquee teams, those top 12 teams in the world. So that was going to hit them hard. But, I mean, I get it when, I think it was it Real's owner that said, you know, no one cares when we play Spartak Moscow.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
No one cares. And I kind of agree with that, to be honest. No one does care. It kind of filters it out. And, I mean, FIFA's response, and UEFA's response is, well, we're going to restructure the Champions League in such a way that there'll be more marquee matches as a result of it. But I mean, that really isn't an answer to me. I think whether you're on the Super League side or you're on UEFA's side, I think both of them still have a ways to go to come up with a system that really works. But I get what the Super League clubs were trying to achieve. Now, why do you think the Premiership teams bailed as soon as, you know, the shit hit the fan?
Because of the fans.
It was fan motivation, you think?
I think so. It was the I would say 80 to 90% of the reason is the fans in England. And like I said before, I mean, I'm really happy that those fans realized what's coming up. And that is not what soccer in Europe, especially in Europe, was.
Yeah.
That's changing everything to the point that you're going to have 16 teams, it doesn't matter, who play between each other. To me, that's not interesting at all because it's not about results. It doesn't matter if you win or lose, you're going to be there. So it's only about the money. That's why I'm telling you, from my perspective, it's not good at all because it loses the essence of soccer. And also, as I mentioned too, let's say you have a 100-year-old derby between, I don't know, any of those big clubs, that would never happen again. Yeah. So why would you take away that from people? I mean, you can't. Basically cannot. Because I'm 100% sure that Super League, actually the Perez, the Real Madrid's guy, he miscalculated some facts there. He couldn't foresee what's going to be with the fans, how they're going to react. He probably thought that it's going to go nicely and smoothly. They will start playing whatever. Obviously, man, like when something like that happened in 48 hours only, that tells you.
That was crazy. That it surprised me how quickly it got turned around and everyone just sort of backed out.
Right.
That really blew my mind because these are massive organizations with sure. huge amounts of money behind them.
Of course.
And to just do an about face the way they did, to me, there's got to be more to it than just the fans. There's got to be some powerful people
in
the background saying, you can't do this.
You know what? Like, as you all saw in the news, beside the fans, it was also the politicians that came out and Boris, right?
Mm-hmm.
So also the many, many older players, like stars, European stars, they also came out and said, guys, this is insane. We're losing what we always had for like over 100 years of the most beautiful game. I guess you agree. It's the most beautiful game in the world, right? So almost I couldn't sleep for 2 days because of that anxiety that I had. And I would say maybe a negative excitement or something, if I can say it like that.
Yeah.
I could see something big is happening. It wasn't only me. I talked to like millions of people those couple of days, like nonstop, about the same subject. And everybody was very nervous and very, you know, they realized also it's the big change is happening. But like I said, luckily it didn't happen.
I guess for me, I understand your perspective. The majority of people I've actually talked to have your perspective on this. But then the majority of people I've talked to, They're all Europeans,
right?
Okay, and they're very strong soccer fans. You don't have as passionate amount of soccer fans here in Canada as you do in Europe. So the majority of my friends that are really big into soccer, they're all Europeans, and all of them are of your opinion, where it's like we understand why they wanted to do it, but we're glad it didn't happen. Now for me, it's a little different because unlike soccer in Europe, where you have a governing body that basically controls everything. Doesn't matter what country you're in, that same governing body controls it. I'm used to the way sports are played in North America, where you generally have individual leagues that have some sort of a commission on top of them, but they're not interconnected. Each league is completely separate. So you don't have this situation where if you do well in your local league, you then play other teams from some other league, and it's all interconnected. We don't have that here, really. We don't, right? We have individual leagues. You become the champion of that particular league, and that's it.
Yep.
It doesn't go on to these additional tournaments that are involving teams from other countries and such. So it's always been kind of strange to me that a organization like UEFA or FIFA has so much power over so many different countries' leagues to decide what happens when they're successful. And that's why I thought the Super League was kind of interesting to me personally, because it was set up in such a way that it's a lot like the way leagues are set up here in North America.
Oh, yeah, I know. But and that's wrong.
See, you don't like that, do you?
No,
see, like I grew up with that.
I know. Well, right? I mean, see,
so I understand the whole one
right,
league
right.
trying to be the champion of that one league.
Right.
And that makes you the champion.
And you know what? It's normal that you have a different opinion than me, because you were born here. I wasn't. I was born in Europe. And obviously my opinion is going to be different for sure.
Yeah.
I just can't ever think that it was a good idea. You know, so, but I understand your point of view. And I also know that, speaking about Real Madrid and Perez, he also, there are some speculations about him trying to get the Real Madrid, the basketball team, to NBA.
Oh, yeah, no, big time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because EuroLeague is, it doesn't bring any money whatsoever. So unless you actually have some extra money on your account, then you can participate.
Yeah.
Whoever wins the EuroLeague, it's the amount that you, the prize is just, you know, peanuts.
I mean, right.
Maybe $1 million or euros, something like that. I'm not sure, you know, but it's not a significant amount of money. So I see his point, but so he was already having that idea about the basketball team. So now I'm not surprised that he also wanted to change the system in Europe to North America. I
yeah.
see his point of view from the money perspective.
Yeah, from the financial perspective,
yes,
it's 100%. A huge windfall.
For sure.
Right? You don't see kids in all parts of the globe mm-hmm. wearing small team jerseys.
Right.
You see, I don't care where you look. You can watch the National Geographic Channel. You're going to see kids in Africa wearing Real Madrid jerseys.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
that's how big those teams are.
Sure.
So he wants to monetize that better for himself. Whereas currently, the real winner is UEFA and FIFA. They're the ones that win on this, because it doesn't matter who you put against Real Madrid, that team's going to make money, right? It's going to be a success for that team.
For sure.
It could be a team nobody knows, but the fact that they're playing Real, that's a big deal.
Of course. I agree with that.
100%. Right? So he's looking at it like his percentage of the pie is too small in comparison
right.
to what that
yes,
team brings.
Exactly. 100%. Man.
I get it. I understand what they were after, but I still think they could have maybe found a happy medium, although I just think UEFA and FIFA have so much power, they don't want to give up any of it.
They don't. And you know, them being so corrupt, they have their own people from the, I don't want to say it's the mafia or whatever, but I'm sure they have some strong influence in every single country in Europe, because we talk about the European soccer. So
yeah, it goes beyond that, but definitely in Europe.
Oh, for sure. And yes, you're right. I mean, it's the piece of pie that they're getting. It's nowhere near what they actually deserve by being a huge club. And yes, I understand Perez when he's saying that Real Madrid, when they played whatever CSK Moscow or whatever, or Dynamo Kiev. But you know, you're also putting down those clubs too, man. You know, because and see the problem is, I think that like 20 years ago when they started blowing up those prices.
Yeah.
They spent, I don't know, Ronaldo was whatever, 99, I think, million euros or something like that. That was the biggest transfer ever until then. A few years ago, you had 222 million euros for Neymar.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, man, how can you even think about spending so much money on a soccer player? Like, there's no way that a soccer player can ever be so valuable.
You're saying they lose on that deal.
It's ridiculous, man. You know, by jacking up those prices, now when the COVID hit, you realize, my friend, that you cannot afford to pay.
Well, not to mention the new stadium.
Right. Right. So Barcelona is they're about to build a new stadium in the middle of the COVID. So no wonder that you don't have money to cover the expenses, to cover the wages, all that stuff. But is it the rest of the club's problem that you were acting like this 20 years ago with all those prices? So now we all have to suffer because of that? I don't think it's right. It's not fair to other people, man.
So what's the answer?
Oh, the answer. See, I'm a little afraid because they tried once now. It didn't happen, obviously, but I'm afraid that in the future they'll try again.
I think they almost have to. We're talking about some very big egos here, right? These are people with huge egos.
100%.
They don't want to be told they can't do something, right? Billionaires don't want to be told, no, you can't do that. So they're going to find a way to try and push something through.
Right. That's why I was so surprised to see that in 48 hours, they had to back down, you know? I couldn't believe that.
That blew me away.
For sure. Because, yeah, like you said, those are rich people, and like the richest people in Europe.
Yeah.
Like, you know, billionaires, and like the way they stopped them, I was amazed, you know? I just couldn't believe. But, of course, like I said before, I'm happy that it didn't happen. So, and I see their point of view. I'm not saying that I don't see the reason for all that, but the TV rates
are massive.
Yes, of course. Especially nowadays in this craziness and madness with COVID and all this stuff. I understand that Real Madrid, they thought, okay, so we don't really care. Okay, so we don't have fans, and God knows when they're going to come back. So we lose a lot of revenue on that.
But if we have the TV rights, we recoup it. That's right. Over.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because right. We have Asia, we have Africa, we have North America.
Everybody watches.
We don't need fans anymore, you know? But, you know, you can see in England, all those Liverpool and Arsenal and Manchester United, all those, I guess most of those owners were Americans, maybe some Russians, whatever, it doesn't matter. But still, I strongly believe it was the fans who came out on the streets and, with the help of, obviously, support of the politicians and all this stuff.
Yeah, Boris Johnson made a number of statements against them, basically.
Right. So, but like I said, I mean, I see their point of view, because they think it's, which is actually a fact, the new generations, millennials, especially with a very short attention span, his opinion is that those games are not really interesting for, like, between Legia Warsaw against whatever, Barcelona or Real Madrid.
Yeah.
You know, nobody cares about that. In order to keep their attention, their focus, he is trying to make it more interesting. But it's, to me, you know, we talked about this a little earlier. Is it really that interesting that you have 12 or 16 clubs playing nonstop against each other?
For me, I understand it. For me, I do think it is that provided they have the kind of talent they currently have, I'll watch that every day of the week, right? So I have no issue with that. For some people, it becomes a little monotonous, especially people who grew up in Europe and used to seeing a varied number of different teams available to them. Last question.
Yeah.
Is Bayern Munich the best team in Europe?
Maybe. I guess I would say so. I don't know.
You look at their recent achievements. They've done a lot.
Yeah.
They've been dominant for the last 3 years.
Yes. 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 And it's... happy they never wanted to join the Super League, by the way.
Yeah, they were one of the ones left out, actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like PSG and them and, I don't know, I guess Borussia Dortmund also, they said no to that. So, yeah, let's see. I don't know. Europe, it was always, European soccer was always about the competition. It's always about beating your rival. That's what we live for. We don't live for the money, because soccer was made by poor people, man. And it was made for poor people. Now, 100 years after, you have the wealthiest
owners, the richest teams,
who actually already took away that soccer from fans, from average, you know, people. So, like I said, again, luckily it didn't happen. So,
yeah, I mean, for me, I know, like we said, it's probably going to be a version 2.0 of this coming at some point.
100%.
So we'll probably revisit this at that time.
Yep.
But I'm still a huge fan of international soccer. That is what I prefer to watch entirely. I mean, I love the Euro. I love the World Cup.
Oh, 100%, man. 100%.
Right. I've always, like, people ask me what I consider to be the sort of hierarchy of most competitive matches. For me, the Euro Cup is the most competitive tournament in soccer in the world. To me, it's number one.
It is. I agree.
Because it's stocked of powerful teams. Anyone can knock off anybody. There are very few weak links in the Euro Cup. Second would be Champions League. And the reason I say that is because you have the best individual clubs in the world, basically, competing against each other. Only it's not as competitive as Euro, because there are a number of weak teams that get in that really don't stand much of a chance. And then third, I would put the World Cup. Because again, the World Cup, until you get to, say, the final eight, really, maybe the top 16, do you actually have really powerful teams in there? But there's a number of teams that make the World Cup that really shouldn't be there. They're just there to get their ass handed to them.
For sure.
Right, yeah. In the group stage.
Yep.
And say, thank you for coming. You get to say you were in the World Cup. But they had never had a chance. So it's a little filtered as well. But the Euro Cup is by far my favorite event to watch. By far.
I agree. Yeah.
It is so competitive. And you have nations that have real rivalries. Whereas in the World Cup, you can play against some nation that you really don't care. Like, oh, we never played you before. Right? This will be fun.
Angola or something like that. You know,
yeah.
Who cares about that?
Interesting. Yeah. You get to meet somebody.
Right.
Right?
But still, you know, they're part of the competition. So, you know, whatever. You know, it's I see your point. I agree. Fully.